podcast exploring a new era for the High Street. We celebrate independent business and bricks and mortar retail across the UK, those who are shaking things up on their local high streets and who believe in the potential of our town and city centres. I'm your host, Alexandra. Welcome along. Hello and welcome to the show. Now, you only have to listen to a few episodes across our series to know that there are many nuanced and indeed complex reasons why the High Street has changed and continues to change around us. But there's one factor that for many is to blame for the decline of the High Street more than any other, and one we haven't interrogated very deeply, and that's technology. Whether it's automation, how sophisticated online shopping has become, how Amazon revolutionised the concept of how quickly things could be delivered, technology has in many ways been the elephant in the room. So this week's episode seeks to redress that balance, at least in part. Today we're talking all things metaverse. I should start by saying I'm a bit of a self-professed Luddite, so I come to this topic very much as a layman. So if you too feel a bit intimidated by discussion of bots, AI, machine learning and all of that, know that today's guest brings these technologies to life in a way that is accessible, colourful and far from the dudes in VR headsets that we're so used to seeing. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Mary Wallace, Retail and Customer Experience Consultant and member of IBM's Metaverse team, as we discuss the many opportunities available to independent retailers in the Metaverse, why it matters that the power of the technology doesn't lie in the hands of the tech bros, and why co-creation is at the centre of making technology more meaningful. I began, though, by asking Mary, what excites her about retail?
There's two versions of that. One is, I think that retail, it's kind of like the plumbing that connects our lives. So at one end, you know, it's the possibly one of the first places that when we're children, we learn how to say please and thank you. We learn, you know, the importance of queuing, how to wait for other people, where we start counting things, you know, where we learn our words and things like that and the names of things. So, you know, that's one way that I look at it. The other way I look at it, it's kind of where human beings connect as well. And we do that through all our lives. Whatever, you know, the small micro moments of every day to the big decisions, the big life decisions, you know, the sort of stuff that we create a John Lewis wish list for if we're lucky enough to do so. You know, and everything in between. And I guess my journey into retail as a professional was accidental. So one day I saw a lot of press around the opening of a new hotel, Chocolat. It was called a concept store in Borough Market. And I was working at the time in an agency in London. So it was nearby where I was working, and all the press was saying how wonderful this new concept store was. I thought, what is a concept store? And it was apparently about, you know, you could see the process of the chocolate being made. They had a menu of actual sort of meals that were made with the cocoa bean, because Hotel Chocolat is famous for, you know, it's not just the end product of the chocolate, it's about how the cocoa bean is used and the whole plant is used. And I thought, oh, this sounds marvellous, because I'm a busybody. I thought, I'm going to go and have a look at this and see if it lives up to the hype, because obviously I'm a cynical northerner as well. But I wanted to test it out for myself. And I think this is one thing that my kind of, if you like, some people would say my useless academic career in critical theory, critical thinking, was about how to understand an event or an image or words or text or whatever it is, and put it into historical context to understand why is that being made, who's the audience, how might this be received. So that so-called useless university career has actually stood me in really good stead for being able to understand the context in which something is produced and it's sold, it's consumed, it's received. So anyway, I went to the Hotel Chocolat in Borough Market, and I put myself in the shoes of a customer. Someone who wasn't myself, so someone with, you know, someone with a child in a buggy, or someone who couldn't get around, you know, someone like myself who's has very poor spatial coordination. And I sort of looked around and thought, it looks nice, but what's actually going on here? And how is this going to be useful to customers of all kinds? So I wasn't just trying to criticize it. And this is a really important point. I wasn't just trying to be negative and throw shade at it. I was trying to think of how other people might use the space, the services, how they might engage with staff and the products. And as luck would have it, literally within 2 weeks, I was at a retail trade event. And in front of me in the TQ was the director of retail for Hotel Chocolat. So again,
This is London.
It's London.
Do you know what I mean? London for you, isn't it?
Or, you
bumping
know,
into I, the head of, my goodness.
It is. You know, I think it's the spirit of Margot Ledbetter. There's a reference for the kids shining on me. So I literally stood in front of it, and it's Darren Williams, who I still know to this day. Hello, Darren, if you're listening. And I stood in front of him trying to get his coffee, which is a bold and risky move. And I said, before you do that, can I just have a word with you about your new store? And he kind of tried to assess, you know, how much of a risk I was and went, go on. So I told him, but when I told him, I put it into context. I was like, this is what I found didn't live up to what I was reading about. And very kindly and graciously, and I'll forever, you know, give him kudos for this, he gave me his card and said, come and meet me at the manager at the store next week, 8 o'clock, and take me through what you were thinking. So I did, and I had made notes, and this is another lesson, kids, make notes, right? Write down what you were thinking and why. So I took them around the store and gave them my impressions. Again, not just criticizing, not just giving my thoughts, but it was, have you thought about, and, you know, if this space is meant to be used by families on a, you know, on a busy Saturday or a half term, you know, the eye level view of something doesn't give the view that you want, or it's really difficult to reach for this or do that or whatever. And at the end of that constructive session, and it was a really good discussion, and they were brilliant. And this is the killer here. Darren turns to the wonderful manager and says, give her the two biggest carrier bags in the store and let her fill them up.
Oh my
God. I literally, my first kind of gig, I was paid in chocolate, not just any chocolate, Hotel Chocolat chocolate.
Wow.
And I went back to my office and my colleagues were literally slack-jawed. They went, how did you do that? And I thought, hey, do you know what? Maybe I could do something with this as a career. And that was actually my first start in retail.
And then it just snowballed from there. What an incredible beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. But the key points there was I looked at it from the customer's point of view, but again, from my own point of view, but I tried to imagine how other people might want to use the space, the service, the questions they might have. Mm. I tried to give constructive feedback to the retailer and make suggestions on how they can improve the space. And I was kind of open and honest as well. Mm. I tried to have a discussion with them. You know, I tried to find out who the people were, because again, and I know a bit more about the retail business. I did understand, you know, they must have worked really hard on this space. They've invested a lot of money. I want them to be the best that they can be, because it's a great idea. There's just a, you know, there's a few things could make this even better and get more people using it and get more benefit. And ultimately, you know, that results in not just more sales, but more people coming back as well. Because I think a lot of these kind of concept kind of ideas, they're great to go to once, and you go with your mate, you spend an hour there, and then do you ever go back? Does it become part of your regular routine? Right. Or, you know, a thing that you look forward to going to, and that maybe you spend a little bit more. I don't know. Yeah. But going there just once, that's not sustainable or scalable for anybody, really, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the changes that you were suggesting then, were they, like you say, were these sort of small tweaks, things that actually were not super far off? Or because I'm thinking the reason why I'm sure they wanted to work with you is that, because if you'd gone in and be like, right, this whole thing's a... But actually, it seems like they were close to it, but just like these little tweaks that make all the difference to a customer's enjoyment.
That's right. A lot of it was about also small tweaks, but also joining the dots. Mm. So, for instance, joining the dots between the digital and physical worlds, appreciating the sense of place and location, how people might approach the store, both kind of physically and, you know, in terms of mindset and who they would be with, you know, that sense of community as well. Because I realized that, you know, those things were actually important to the brand as well. Mm. So it was trying to engage with them on their terms, but also on the customer's terms as well.
Mm. Mm. And that's a perfect place to begin the conversation about the metaverse, really, isn't it? This blending of the physical and the digital. It's almost like we've discussed this before, and we haven't, listeners. I feel like you're just excellent at just like lighting things up, because this idea of a kind of concept store, I feel like that in my head is what I envisage as how we're going to interact with the metaverse. But before we begin, before we start all of this, can you give a bit of framing as to what we mean when we talk about the metaverse in retail? What are we talking about?
Sure. Again, because I like to give value for money, I'll give you two versions. One is my kind of cheesy version. The other one is the slightly more official version. Okay. So my version is, if you're using an Instagram filter, you're already, in air quotes, using the metaverse. And I understand why listeners might be bristling at that word, because I think it has become a quite loaded term and possibly with some negative connotations, because it's used to mean a big bucket. It's a big bucket for lots of things, really. Mm. So the way I think of it is, if you think of a spectrum of things where at one end you've got an Instagram filter, or if you're using a QR code in a store, you know, you're taking your phone out, you're pointing it at a physical thing in a physical store, possibly, you know, a QR code or a poster or something like that on a wall in a store or at an event, then there's a digital layer being put over your physical space. And hopefully that digital layer is giving you something useful to use in that moment, in that place, that's meaningful for you. And you can, you know, do something that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do in that physical space. Mm. You know, say if there's not a member of staff around, or the poster or the merchandising display isn't giving you the right information, you can get more out of it in the same space, again, with a small tweak, but using, in this case, your phone. So that's kind of one end of the spectrum. And again, you know, an Instagram filter is, you know, an extra layer of stuff over something you're already using. Mm. Then if we sort of come through to the other end of the spectrum, and this is where people start thinking like, oh, metaverse, it's just headsets in it, because every single press article and media piece you see about the metaverse, there's someone standing with a pair of headphones obscuring their face, sort of staggering around some kind of space, with their hands in the air, looking as if they've joined a cult and they're semi-comatose. And to be honest with you, it doesn't look very fun or inviting at all. So you think, why the hell would I want to do that?
Yeah.
So there is the other end of the spectrum where, you know, maybe you do have a headset device, but I like to sort of go in the middle of the road, which is unusual for me, which is where I think of it very much as about getting more value out of physical spaces. So a building, a wall, a poster, something like that, where you can add extra layers of value with something you're doing already in a physical space. And we will come back to that. But the slightly more kind of, I guess, philosophical version is metaverse is basically a catch-all description for describing how we're moving from a 2D flat screen-based way of engaging with the internet to something that potentially involves an awareness of a 3D spatial environment, which is a fancy way of saying creating something that looks flat to you today in a 3D way, whether you're looking at a screen on a laptop or a phone, or whether you're in a room or a shop or at an event. It feels like something is 3D, you know, you can reach out and touch it or explore it. And the kind of bigger way of thinking about that is, really, it's a way of thinking about a new set of values on which we build the next generation internet. Now, there's a lot of words beginning with co here, but that's really the way to think about it and is potentially the game changer. So I was just talking about feeling like you're with other people with things, and we might call that co-presence. So you feel that you're in a place with other people, but you might be, you know, like I am now in a room on my own. It feels like you're with your community or communities. So tribes, kinship groups, friendship groups, people with whom you share a common interest or identity. And it's not just consuming stuff as well. It's not just, it shouldn't just be like, here's some more marketing, but done in a slightly fuzzy, are we 20 years ago on a bad website way, which is a lot of what I'm saying. You've got to feel like if you're participating in something that you are literally, you are collaborating, that you've got a stake in it, that you can customize or change or personalize something or even make something yourself. And that then dotted line leads to, oh, actually, if I'm changing, customizing or co-creating, there's another phrase beginning with co, I might want to trade that or sell it or share it. What does that mean for what we currently call today retail? It might lead us into perhaps a better word to use would be commerce. So in other words, if there are communities making things, customizing things, changing things, and they're distributing them, they might want to earn revenue from that. So what would the business model be for that new way of creating, sharing, distributing to wider audiences, trading, selling? So from that small way of thinking, well, it's just kind of 3D assets on a headset in it, you start to get into some really like, oh, wow, moments, because the potential for change is there. But my question is, are we going to see it anytime soon? Because the way to make that happen is to get other people involved other than big business.
Interesting. Because, I mean, so it's such a fascinating area. When you were talking about assets, the first thing that came to mind was the conversation around NFTs. And I guess around how we've seen they seem to have like a sort of, obviously they still exist and they're still being talked about. But there was like 6 months ago, there was a huge burst of energy around that market and a huge inflation and overinflation, perhaps. Definitely in some cases. So that's not, I'm just sort of, is that what we're talking about effectively, is like digital assets which exist only, does that exist in the metaverse? Is that in the part of the same conversation, this around NFTs?
Yeah, again, I think the phrase NFTs, and I can hear people sighing already.
yeah.
I think, again, I'll try and put this kindly. The way that they were first been used is not a great showcase for the capabilities that really they have and the potential they could offer. Instead of thinking about stupid pictures of apes, which, you know, are sold for a ridiculous amount, you know, footballer money, it's possibly easier to think of them as just a key or a token that carries information that's unique to you that can unlock something. And that something can be a space, an experience, a product, some other kind of digital asset, you know, content is a good example. And it basically, that token gives you permission to do things. It can give you permission to travel between digital and physical spaces. It gives you permission to, if you think of it almost like a loyalty or a membership scheme, you know, I can unlock tier one, you can unlock tier three. You get access to this, I get access to that. And that can be based on a lot of information about, you know, what we like, what we've bought, what we intend on buying, where we live, all kinds of things. And it can be used with individuals, and it can also be used with groups of people as well. So, you know, one way at the moment that NFTs are being used is as a ticket to an event, again, both digital and physical. Right, which is a really interesting way of looking at it.
Do you know what's really interesting is when you're talking, what instantly I was just thinking is, in my, I guess I've envisaged the metaverse, and I call it the, and I, interestingly, I notice that you talk about metaverse and not the metaverse, because I think in my head, it's almost like a universe and it's a space that looks one way. But what you're talking about is actually a way for us to use digital platforms, or how to, in order for us, it's not, there's not one way to use it. There's not one way it's going to look. And I think in my head, exactly like you were saying, I'm coming up with these, it's actually Microsoft meetings that I'm coming up with in my head, of like these places where you're going into something and I'm in a room and I'm looking around and that's it. And that's what it feels like when I envisage it in my head. But actually, there feels like there's so much more potential and so much more color, and it can be a lot more vivid than perhaps the image that we're getting, some of the images we're getting about what it could look like.
That's right, yeah. And again, I think a lot of the images we've been seeing are very much kind of the shiny press release version, where it's just about, to be blunt, selling expensive things to people with more money than sense.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas actually, when you dig down into some of those, maybe, you know, some of those words that I said before, collaboration, different ways of looking at commerce, the notion of decentralization is a really key part of the metaverse as well. And by that I mean, it's moving away from like one organization, one business organization being the central arbiter of a service or a product. Yeah. Is so, you know, a big retailer in this instance. And the notion of decentralization is that multiple participants have an equal stake and an equal say in what is produced, why it's produced, how it's produced, how it's distributed, sold, how that revenue and profit is shared as well. Now, when I start to say things like that to traditional, you know, big retailers, they start, well, some of them start to look very worried and go, what? What are you talking about? Are you trying to destroy capitalism? But then lots of them get really excited because they think, oh, wow, this could be a new and different way of doing things, right? Where maybe, you know, both, and again, this is theoretical at the moment, not just risk and reward is shared, but kind of the role of kind of product development is shared. How do we make decisions? Can that be made easier? How do we bring people closer to the brand? Again, a lot of brands these days, they talk a good talk about, you know, we want to bring the consumer closer to the brand. We want brand ambassadors. Well, what I say to them is, okay, now it's genuinely time to put your money where your mouth is, because these type of concepts are setting new behaviours, new expectations for behaviours from consumers, a lot of whom are saying, I'm not content with just being a consumer anymore. I want to do more, and I want to know how I do that with you. So it's a really good test of, okay, you know, it's not just do you want to dance, it's as, you know, there's a whole new dance to learn. So it's going to be really interesting for retailers of all sizes and flavors to see how they get to grips with it, because I think consumers might be more ready to I'd like a stake in a new business model, because I don't feel like I've been getting a fair value exchange right up to this point. So maybe now it's time for that to change.
How willingly, though, will some businesses give up that stake? Because this notion of co-creation, and the one thing I wrote down there was IP. Like, how are we going to make it, this idea of co-creating something where secrecy can abound in particularly in product development? So how can we encourage this collaborative? It's much more thoughtful. It's a much more, it reminds me a lot of some of the kind of founding principles of what we thought the internet was going to look like. How do we encourage businesses to work together? How do we encourage those principles?
I think that's a really good question. So one way of looking at that is, if today, I don't think there's any business in the world, whatever the sector really, especially retail, who can afford to stand alone and do everything themselves. The whole mode of business in 2023 is about, you know, we use the words like partnership, collaboration, ecosystems of partners. And that's where, you know, it's not product development and IP is one thing, but it's actually about how do you become more efficient and quick, and how do you understand, you know, what the market and what customers need much better. I think some of the lessons learned, and I am old enough to have been there at the dawn of things like e-commerce and you know, how we sell over the internet. And at the time, again, you know, we've all been on this learning journey, and, you know, I see echoes of that now in terms of there's lots of experiments happening with metaverse stuff. Plenty of mistakes will be made. You know, that's fine, as long as we learn from them. You know, back in the olden days of e-commerce, you know, we just put literally, we replicated a shelf on a screen with some products on it, and we thought that customers would want to go round a replica of a supermarket aisle or a store, which actually, you know, we all laugh at that now, but we've not come that far from that. You know, if you're shopping online, in a lot of cases, you're still looking at a grid of products or a list of products, which, you know, if you've gone back to the days of printed catalogue, you know, the Sears catalogue or Littlewoods or anything like that, showing my Crosby roots there, you know, of the catalogue town, Littlewoods and Grattan and things like that. I don't think we've come much further from that for lots of different reasons. You know, I was in a store yesterday looking at how might we envisage where we could go with this. And one of the things I think that being, again, metaverse is about, what can we do? What can we create that, you know, you couldn't do in the normal world? And I was looking at a handbag display, because it was fancy London, you know, and it was a display where they also had like pictures of clouds and, you know, fantastical fairy tale images, because it was a promotion. So instead of putting a handbag on a shelf, you could have it appear to you on a cloud or something like that. That is a really ridiculous example, but the point is, it should be more about exploring, giving me something I can't get already, different ways of thinking about store and space design and how you merchandise products. But again, what I'm describing, that's at the far end of the spectrum, the more fantastical end.
Yeah.
If we come back to a more nuts and bolts end, and I'm thinking about independent retailers and local high streets here, think about if you've got a really small space and your opening hours are limited, you know, exactly right now, maybe you can only afford to open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You can't afford to open Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
You could offer a digital overlay of, you know, the outside of your store, maybe, so that customers can get information on products. Maybe they can order them ahead. So you've got orders coming ahead when you do open the store, and you can make more out of the small format of your physical space. So you can add a digital overlay to a shelf, a poster, a merchandising display, something like that, so they can get more information on product. If there's only one of you, you know, there's more services available to them, so you don't lose that sale. So they can find out more about you as, you know, your store brand product ambassador. They can dig deeper into what makes you special and unique and part of your local place as well. And then there's a whole other side about thinking about how does the high street use the metaverse as well, which we'll come on to.
Because on that example then, when you talk of, just to be really clear, when you're talking about this kind of digital overlay, are you talking about somebody being on the website and exploring, being able to explore much more kind of realistically the shop? Or is about, because in my head when you said that, I was thinking of standing outside the shop and like scanning something and then opening on my phone? Or what do you mean by that? What could that look like?
So it's a good question. So again, there's a couple of ways of looking at that. So one, again, simply could be extending whatever your kind of omnichannel capability is today. If you've already got a website, you can literally put some 3D type assets, 3D type content onto your existing website. So if you've got a product that people want to, I'm miming something in my hand now, they want to pick up and inspect. You know, if it's a garment, they want to look at the seam, how the fabric falls in the light. If it's a product that talks a lot about ingredients and provenance, can they find out more about the supply chain of the ingredients, something about the grower or the producer? Or if it's a technical product, again, can they find out more about the dimensions, how it actually works? Can they go inside the product? Things like that. So there were some really practical applications. You know, I did describe quite a fantastical example before, but what we're seeing now, I call it the non-sexy side of the metaverse, which to me is actually potentially where there's the most application for more people. So things around what I've just described. So if you think about if you're an independent retailer or a small retailer, what can you do with limited store and space design? But also things like manufacturing and supply chain operations. If we step away from the customer end at the minute, how might we bring some new capabilities to a physical manufacturing or distribution process? How might we inspect a production line at lower risk, more quickly, you know, quicker than a human eye can spot? How can we perhaps look at a potential mechanical or business function and simulate three possible scenarios before we, you know, lay a brick down on a building, before we invest in something, before we've bought a really expensive product or piece of kit? I think there's lots of, you know, efficiencies, capabilities that are available to us that we're not, I'm not really seeing that in the press, especially when we think about the mixed reality. Again, getting away from the idea of the headset. When you look at mixing reality, so again, I can take a physical thing and find out more about it. I can understand how it fits within a physical space or a constraint. I can work with other people who aren't with me right now to make a decision. So, you know, I'm reducing risk, I'm cutting out cost, I'm getting rid of multiple layers of decision making. That's not just benefit to big business. If you're a small indie, but you're working with multiple suppliers, why can't that bring benefits to you as well? And that's one of the frustrating things I'm seeing at the moment. I'm just seeing the conversations, you know, being related to big business. When I think there's so many opportunities for other types of businesses, especially in our high streets, in our local communities.
I find it so interesting because you're adding such colour to something which it has been quite dull. I think because how it's described, particularly in anything kind of pieces I've read, or with the exception of yours, which I will link to in the notes, because it's what's so interesting is it's adding colour to something which, and making it real life applications. And I think that's always when things kind of come to life. But it sounds tremendously exciting. But just to sort of think about independent retailers for the moment, the one thing at the moment is just about how, you know, how stretched everyone is and how thin on the ground money is and how the pressures and things. And I guess a lot of people might think, is this another thing? Is this another thing to do? Is it another thing that's going to cost us a lot of money and we're not going to see the return? Or what would you say to that?
I would absolutely feel the pain of those retailers thinking, oh my God, you're telling me I've got to do another thing. So I totally get that. So that's why I'm always kind of looking like, what are kind of some quick wins, some quick areas where it doesn't need to cost a lot of money, or take a lot of pain and time. So, I mean, I mentioned one thing earlier, which is around, you know, if you've got a website with lots of like 2D assets on, start thinking about how you might create some 3D assets, or rather even repurpose 2D assets, you know, get more out of what you've already got. Another area, which again is, I think is really interesting, is thinking about things like staff training, which is probably a slightly dull way of describing it. But if we think more about, you know, how do you elevate and accelerate what colleagues already do right now in terms of learning about products, but also things like health and safety, risk management, facilities management, things where you have to, or now you have to be in a physical space, use a physical thing. So it could be equipment, machinery, systems. How can we make that easier and quicker and safer for them to quickly understand sometimes difficult to learn information just by being able to look at the thing itself instead of reading five pages on how it works? Right. So that might be somewhere where an independent retailer can tap into someone else's capability. So you're thinking about not just upskilling, but knowledge retention, elevating skills. Another example might be service rehearsal for a big seasonal event. Mm-hmm. So because we're talking about high streets, it might not be Black Friday. I'm thinking of something like, Record Store Day.
Yeah.
Where lots, you get massive queues outside your store and that queue's going past other people's stores as well. How can we rehearse for that? Mm. Is there a way to do that? Can we look at option A, option B, option C? Because then you can use that to maybe do something around your staff rota, collaborating with the other retailers on your high street, which you're probably already doing already, right? Mm. So it's those kinds of things where we can model something, simulate something quickly at low cost, and we can find out more about what's the best decision to make if we know all these things. Mm. Complex situations where also things like culture and empathy and local knowledge come into play as well. Again, something you can't just read in a book.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things.
And that has huge potential for accessibility. And I was actually thinking about different ways people are kind of neurodiverse as well, or how different ways people learn. And that could have a huge potential in enabling. Some people don't like you say, reading things. They like to be much of a more immersive or learning by doing. Or there's lots of potential in that, particularly for staff training. I think that's really interesting use, for sure. When we think about the high street then, and actually a lot of what you were saying there really echoed the sentiments of Andrew Goodacre about kind of talk to people, work with other people, get on, speak to other retailers in your high street, particularly at this kind of testing time. But also I think it's really important to pull together in difficult times, but also in good. And I think there's a lot of good and potential and exciting things that we could be doing here. When you think a bit more holistically about the high street as a general then, and it kind of and how you envisage that happening, what other elements of the high street do you think will change through the use of the metaverse? Or how do you think that, what other uses do you think that it could have?
Well, I hope that it opens up more of the high street to more people. So I've mentioned kind of a basic thing like opening hours, being able to share your services more widely, being able to introduce yourself to a wider group of people. I think one of the things, and again, I'm remembering when kind of e-commerce started hundreds of years ago now, and it was just talked about with a technology lens. All we heard about was the technology.
Yeah.
And we didn't really hear about the new sort of business opportunities that it might open up to non-big business, if you like. So I'm going to throw a bit of a phrase out now.
Okay.
And I'm going to explain the phrase, and I'm going to explain it in my own way. Because again, when it becomes a technology conversation, you get 100 flavors of, I'm trying not to swear here, 100
Feel
flavors
free.
Of jargon, bullshit, digital bingo, right? The phrase I'm going to use is decentralized autonomous organization.
Okay.
And it's often shortened to DAO.
Yep.
What the hell does that mean? What it means is it's a new kind of business model, which is collective. So it's created by a community of people who, in theory, they all have a common goal, right? So it's a group of people coming together around a shared goal, a shared mission. And in theory, again, all of those people, they share the decision-making, the management, and the ownership of that business. I mentioned this before, but this is the phrase that describes it. So what do we produce? How are decisions made? How do we create revenue? How are those profits shared? Mm. All that kind of stuff. So that's a technology-enabled thing, but that thing is a radical... Well, today it feels like it's radical, and we describe it as radical. However, for those of you who know your history, you'll know that Yeah, people have been doing that for years, Mary. What are you going on about? As ever with a new technology conversation, old things are presented as shiny as and new when actually people have been doing it for bloody years. But I guess the thing here is that could this be a way for small businesses and communities to come together to go, well, we're not going to wait for someone else on high to make this decision or to, you know, open up an opportunity. We can come together. We can do it for ourselves. We can create a business model that's, you know, we will make money off so that we can survive and, you know, have a life, but also to be of benefit to this community. And actually, potentially, it could be the community that is that organization who's, you know, doing it precisely for that community, for that locality. They understand what products and services are needed for the needs of those people, right? And they don't have to, you know, succumb to anyone else's direction because there is a financial control there. Now, why aren't we hearing and talking more about that? Why are we only hearing the tech bro version of metaverse? You know, and I speak as you can probably tell, I'm a 51-year-old, really grumpy woman. I have a lot of rage, you know, the HRT doesn't quite temper that down. You know, this isn't my first rodeo. So I'm like, this is a tool that we can use, but that conversation isn't being opened up because all we're hearing right now is metaverse. Oh yeah, it's for gaming, it's for people under 25, it's for people with a lot of money. End of story.
Do you think, I mean, but it's quite difficult. I remember somebody once saying to me, I think I felt like I had a very small use of the internet. I think he'd mentioned, I was at uni and I think he mentioned something about, and I was like, what is that? And he was like, push out, right? He was like, push out. And you're living in this like small, tiny corner of the internet. There's a whole world out there. And I've been thinking a lot about that idea as you're speaking about a lot of us feel, I think the reason why I feel so that this conversation has been so heavily dominated by the big players is that it's almost like we can't envisage a world without them. It's like it feels like they dominate so much of the conversation. So the idea of this, again, utopian almost idea of people working collaboratively and I mean, it sounds great, but how do we, and listeners, I'm actually grabbing here, I'm grabbing like, how do we take back that power from... But basically what we're talking about is kind of the web 3.0, I guess, but the next iteration of what we're creating, which metaverse is hugely central to that, I guess. What are your thoughts on that? How do we as small business owners particularly give voice against these behemoths?
I'm just leaving a pause there so that the retailers, the listeners can shout their opinions. I mean, I guess this sounds trite, but, you know, there's some truth in it. It's we need to hear new messages. We need to hear new conversations from a different range of people because right now the range of people talking about metaverse, it's very small and it's very male and, you know, it's really limited. And you mentioned accessibility and diversity before, and I really want to see this, not just the conversation opened up, I want to see the access to the tools, you know, the technology enablers opened up, because every retailer, every high street, every local community I know is shit hot at business already. They know every, you know, funding channel, you know, ways to get support. You know, during the pandemic, they were the ones who were straight off the mark, you know, using technology to create new services to serve their communities in the right way. And my God, are we not grateful for that? Mm-hmm. So I'd really like to see as a next stage, I'm kind of answering a question with a question, but inviting local communities and high streets to some of the big tech events so that they can get their hands on this stuff, that they can not just participate, but there's a phrase I've heard used recently, which is, we don't want a seat at the table. We want to smash that table up and build our own. And for me, it's like, why? We don't want to do the same things, but just with more gizmos. Yeah. Let's get rid of those things.
Let's rethink the whole thing.
Yeah. This is opportunity, let's do it in the right way. You know, if those words that I said, you know, and you said community, collaboration, co-creation, if we are to take them and not just have them to be more feel good, cheesy bullshit, technology phrase there, let's do something with them. You know, I see wonderful examples all over the UK of people, local people doing amazing things. You know, just a few, you know, locavore in, in the Glasgow and central area of Scotland, right? What they're doing is really interesting. Some of the things going on around where I live in Pendle and Lancashire in terms of things that started maybe with farmers markets are now actually whole alternative food systems for local areas, right? Things, just one example of that. How do we connect these things up? And I guess this is just a question I want to throw out to the audience, because I believe it or not, you've probably guessed by now, I don't have the answers here. I just know what I'm not seeing and not hearing. And I know that all those people are out there who've done brilliant things already. There has to be, it's not just about a better way to do things, it's doing new things, different things. That's got to be the way.
It feels radical change. I think it feels like we're constantly on the cusp of radical change, and but it's going to take, and I've said this so many times, and listeners are going to roll their eyes, and they're going to, but stick with me, it's going to take bold leadership. We're going to need, it's not going to be easy, and I think there's an element of really disrupting the apple cart here, that I'm saying it like it sounds ominous, like it's a bad thing, but I feel like a lot of the stuff we're doing isn't working. And I've been chatting a lot about that recently. I'm like, I just think it's time for these fresh ideas, this freshness, a different way of working. I mean, you were saying about dismantling capitalism. Not quite, but let's think about different models, or let's think about different ways to do business. And I think that that seems to be so woven into what you're saying. Which I find so interesting. I wondered whether we could just revisit this idea of accessibility, because I just wanted to talk about, I think another kind of misnomer about metaverse is that we're all going to be sitting at home on our headsets and not interacting with anybody, and it's all going to be quite a lonely existence. And one thing I think I find about shopping online, and I don't shop online really because I find it tremendously unsatisfying. I don't get any feel good from it. But again, what you're talking about is this blend of the physical and digital. So I just wanted to explore that a little bit in accessibility, with thinking about our conversation with Ilsa from ILC about kind of older people particularly, and about actually this could enable people to visit shops or get a different level out, or engage with the high street in a different way.
I think this could be a brilliant opportunity to open up the high streets. Not just open up the high streets to more people, maybe that's not quite the right way, but helping people get more out of the high street on every visit. So it could be everything from, you know, if you struggle with small print, I think that was an example used in the brilliant episode that you did with Ailsa.
Thank you.
Or trying to get information that is empathetic to my needs. So, you know, a really blunt example is if there's only one assistant, you know, if there's only one person in the store to help me, they might not immediately understand my needs, or I might not actually want to share that, you know. I speak as someone who does have autism and other needs. So, oh God, I don't want to tell you, but I just want to buy some bog roll or whatever it is. I just want to do the thing. I don't want to share my life story. So is there a way where we can provide services that are more empathetic and sensitive, with me just sharing just a little bit of information about myself that might make it easier for me to understand what's on offer, or for the store or the service to understand more about me so that I get the right thing in a convenient and easy to use way. And that can be, you know, that can be whatever the, you know, whatever my need is. It could be a language thing or an ability thing, or just the way, you know, the way things are today, thing, or, you know, whatever it is. And I think, again, I think the high street and local retailers have absolutely led the way in this. You know, possibly the only constraints are, you know, you're a single trader, or you don't open, you don't have the opening hours of, you know, a big store because you're a sole trader. So how might we do that and, you know, connect people with what is, as I said before, what is the special, unique service that only you, that local retailer, can provide? Because for all the talk of algorithms and data and personalization, there is absolutely nothing on this earth that replicates the relationship and relationships that a local business has with those local people. You cannot store that in a piece of data, but what you could do is make it more easily or widely accessible for people when they need it. One of those things could be, if I'm not physically able as a local resident to actually get to the physical store, how might I access services or information about your store that make it easier for me to buy the stuff, get the information, keep that relationship going with you? Because as you said before, I want to be with people, I want to connect with people, but it might not be possible right now. So let's look at ways that we can do that. So what we're doing is fostering and nurturing connections, and not kind of, again, a lot of the pictures I see of the metaverse is you look abandoned in the middle of a digital ghost town, and it looks really scary. It's like, oh, I'm on my own in some kind
zombies are going to come out.
I don't want to be here. I want to be with my mates, or, you know, nice people in a nice place.
Yes.
So how do we bring that to the experience design?
Yeah. I mean, that is fundamental. And I think it's really important that you said there, like, we're not trying to replace anything about the physical connection and the really important connection that people love having with a local shop, or indeed with a big, maybe a giant brand, but it's with a sales assistant or with a manager there or whatever. We're not trying to replace it. It's really feels about enhancing that experience and increasing that accessibility. I love that. And I wonder, I mean, I feel like when you were talking there's also implications, though, I guess we also have to consider all the other things that were on top of everything else, the privacy concerns, I'm guessing, because if someone was to disclose, you know, any health condition or anything to do with kind of anything to do personal information, I guess, particularly around medical, we need to be sure about who handles this information, who has access to it, how it can't be manipulated in any way. It feels like we're sharing potentially more and more with retail, and how could that come into play with something like a club card or a Nectar, you know? And I don't know, there's some maybe ethical implications there, isn't there, about how this could be treated, has to be treated, you know, responsibly.
Yes, absolutely. I think, again, looking back over the past sort of 25 years of e-commerce, there's a lot of very painful lessons being learned and are still being learned, because those data leaks still happen. Mm-hmm. I guess to look on the positive side, one of the potential benefits of the metaverse and Web3 is the notion of decentralization. So one aspect of that is, again, potentially the user, the individual, the consumer or the citizen has more control of their data and gives consent to you as a brand or a retailer to use it for a fair value exchange. So it kind of flips things around. So if you think of today, you know how much information you have to give to a brand or a retailer just to get a service of some kind. Hopefully the value exchange will be more, it'll be more on the other foot. So instead of the retailer or whoever is holding all your data, you hold it and then you decide to give it, if you like. So it's the other way around. Again, we've yet to see this really come to fruition. So let's really interrogate that and find out, you know, is that as good as it sounds? Because that could be, that could really help, I think, develop those positive behaviors that we want to see. I will say, actually, last year when I'd started to talk to big corporate brands and retailers about this, I was in a room of a very famous international brand, about equal men and women in the room, I would say. And we started to talk about some of these issues. So privacy, consent, and I was on a panel of people. How can I put this gently? Okay, the rest of the panel were all men. Mm. And they were quite open with going, yeah, yeah, it'll be fine. You know, you can do this and you can share this information and it will all be fine. And I kind of pondered on this and I said to the room, I said to all the women in the room, are you happy going into another digital space using the same behaviours, the same safeguards, the same kind of boundaries that you've experienced in today's digital world? Mm-hmm. And every single one of the women, every single one said no straight away. They all said, we can't go. It's kind of like what we were saying before the business. We can't move forward with the same behaviours and support of negative behaviours, let's be honest, that we see today. This has to be different. They also actually talked about not just themselves, but their children as well. And absolutely right, they were worried, you know, my kids spend so much time online already and I want to get them out. And now you're telling me there's going to be more stuff that they're going to be expecting to do online. What the hell do I do now? Yeah. So there are real understandable concerns now, which is why, again, I'll just reiterate what we've both said is this is a chance to create something new, right? We can't move forward replicating. Mm-hmm. It's got to be different for all of the reasons that we've discussed here and many more as well.
I mean, people are listening to this and thinking, well, I hope that you're a huge part of this because I feel like I'm ready to like get into battle with you, like behind you, Mary. Like, are you central? Are you in your role at the moment? Are you kind of working as part of a central to push a new version of what the metaverse could look like?
So the honest answer to that is I am but one woman, Sandra. I'm so gracious with that, aren't I?
But mighty, though. Come on. Look at that.
Well, yeah, but there's only one of me. And actually, if I can flip this around and turn this into a plea.
Yeah.
I know that I work in the technology industry, but my gosh, I am the only woman in 99% of the conversations and meetings, whatever I have. We need more women. Mm. And I know that it's not for women not wanting to be part of this. It's the... Who are the gatekeepers here?
Yeah.
There was actually quite a depressing article by McKinsey recently, which is about the absence of female leadership in all the metaverse activities. We're not seeing it. We're not hearing from women. Why is that? It's taken so long for women to, you know, get their rightful places in any kind of business leadership, but technology and business leadership especially.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing now, again, I am relatively old for this industry. I am seeing some worrying things and absences, and I'm not hearing things. So I would extend the hand to any woman or young woman or girl listening, take my hand and grab it and haul yourself. Also, I've got long hair like Rapunzel on its thing. So get, and there's a lot of me, so you can get hold of me, whatever you can. Come and join me. If you see that I'm going to be speaking at an event, if you've seen that I've written something, if you see me in the street, come and talk to me. Come and join me on that stage. Come and join me on that panel, because it's quite lonely out there, and we need this next stage of the internet to have that representation. And I'm speaking from my own experience as a woman, and I'm a white woman as well. And again, I am very, very aware of the position that I'm speaking from. Mm. So we really need that to happen. So anyone who wants to get in touch with me, please do, and we'll. I haven't got the answers, but I'm really happy to work with you to try and, you know, achieve that change.
I love that, and I think absolutely, and in the spirit, and I think the collaborative, co-creative, co-presence, I think is the word you used as well earlier, which I loved. That's very much in the spirit, isn't it? This isn't going to happen. This isn't going. Yeah, I mean, you know, a wonderful. But you're absolutely right. I mean, we can't put it all on your shoulders. I would love to, but no, we can't. But no, I think that's there's just so many aspects of this that are just absolutely fascinating, and I very much feel that we have simply scratched the surface here. There's so much, and it really is early days, isn't it? I mean, this is very early days for, yeah, in terms of. Because what are we talking about? Are we talking about things being developed as we speak? Or things, are we thinking about new purposes? Are we testing things? Where are we at in this journey, I guess?
Yes, I mean, all of the above. There's a lot of things being technically developed and tested. And actually, they're in the market right now. I guess a clumsy way to think of it, again, back to the spectrum, if you think of kind of levels of where we are on the journey, sort of 0 to 5. Mm. So if you think about kind of level 0 as being like 2D pages of web links, things like targeted advertising and stuff like that, we're probably around level 2 right now, which is things like... you've got connected virtual world, you've got avatars, you've got things like virtual clothing and accessories, you know, those new digital products and services that we're starting to see come forward. And then probably level 5, so all the way into, well, you know, the future, we're starting to think about things like any interface can be enabled with mixed reality. So augmented reality, virtual reality, audio, things like that. Wow. We're starting to think about things like digital twins of lots of things. God. So that means a digital representation of a physical asset. So a building, a product, a person, or a process.
That sounds terrifying.
I think it's terrifying because a lot of the times it feels like this is being done to us. Yes. It's not being done with or for us. And I think that's the key difference. It feels like this is being imposed on us from somewhere else by someone who doesn't know us. And this is back to kind of the crux of my, I suppose, my argument. How is this, how can we make this a thing that we do with and for,
and this is crucial,
right?
Yeah, and this is so crucial to your beginning in retail when you talked about that concept store. The customer was absolutely central. You were like, well, what's it like for them, or how, what are they seeing, or, and again, that seems to be a thread that's been completely woven through your career. It's like that is exactly it. It's like things are being created thinking, oh, that'll be a nice thing, or oh, they'll probably want that, and actually this is so, we have to be, the end user needs to be completely integral to the design of this. You're absolutely right.
Yes. Again, another reference for our younger listeners is, I often think, this is being said of me, either Margot Ledbetter, Margot from The Good Life, or someone else said I'm like Margaret Rutherford. So one of my icons, actually, the British film star from lots of Ealing comedies and things like that. Amazing. Basically, aging, busybody, battle axe, again, which are all negative terms used
very
to describe
negative,
women,
yeah,
which actually mean fully engaged, fully switched on woman who's trying to find things out to help other people, right, and who won't take no for an answer and won't take shit from people. But I'm absolutely owning that, by the way, and I love tweed and I'm all for a hat. So, yeah, it's always being done. And I think, do you know what, again, to be cheesy, I think this is sort of coming from Liverpool and the north. It's very much a, you know, I used to go down places like Bold Street in Liverpool and ask people, what have you got in your shopping bag? What are you having for tea? and find out, where did you buy that from? Have they got any left? How much, love? Where are you going next? You going to the pub? You know, that's quite a Liverpool thing as well. So I think it's just taking that kind of spirit and just being really bloody nosy, but for the right reasons and intending on trying to get a good outcome. Because this is about, it is about trying to help businesses as well. It's not just being bullshit for the sake of it. It's about, well, I want to help you here. I want to listen. And I also know that, you know, I am just one voice, but I want to get other people involved as well, as we were just saying.
Yeah. And as you were saying in your piece, which again, which we'll link to, it's brilliant, because I think it's, if I'm not suggesting, it's not like do or die, but I do think that this is the next, it's about supporting particularly independent retailers. And they've also shown themselves to innovate incredibly quickly, work with digital technologies so brilliantly, particularly during the pandemic, and just move things online, for example. But it is about making sure that people are ready to take on the next iteration of the internet, but also of their own business, and where and how to ensure that they are resilient for this next stage, I guess, is part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no need to panic. It is just about thinking about, how do I as a business get ready for the metaverse? What's right for me? Where should my focus be? And again, it might not be just you on your own. It could be with a group of businesses on the high street. You know, you're not alone. Collaboration, community, co-creation. Let's bring it back to that. Right.
Absolutely. And what a fantastic place to close. I mean, I'm going to say this chat, because I do feel we need you back on as various things will happen with the metaverse. I'm guessing there's going to be landmark moves or things that happen that move the whole thing forward, or, you know, and it'd be brilliant to have you back on the series to discuss and reflect on how the journey so far. Mary, thank you. It's been absolutely fascinating. You've really brought something to life which I think so many of us have difficulty understanding. So thank you for your eloquence and your vivacity, actually. You're just sort of so thank you
Alexandra for having me.
I really hope this chat inspired you as much as it did me. Feel free to share your thoughts about the episode over on Instagram or via email. And indeed, if you've been inspired to make the leap into metaverse yourself, then I'd love to hear more about how you plan to do so. Details of how you can get in touch are in the show notes. I'm taking a brief pause in the series for now, but don't worry, I'll be back very soon with more tales from local high streets, indie retail, and discussing the next era for our high streets. Until then, thanks for listening, and bye for now.